You're listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast with Rachel McCathy. News outlets are increasingly seeing the benefits of having two-way conversations with their audiences and on maximising social networks in building closer relationships to their community. But looking a step beyond that, there are also a number of examples of news outlets which are keen to invite their audience to play a direct role in editorial processes, either via online or through real-world engagement. In this week's podcast, we'll look at examples of such interactions between news outlet and audience and hear of some of the lessons learned from past and present projects which sought to increase community involvement day to day. We'll start in the US, more specifically in Connecticut, and hear from Matt DiRenzo, group editor of Journal Register Company newspapers for the state. He talked about the early impact of new chief executive for the company in 2010, John Payton.
He was talking about digital first, and you know, the way that he described digital first was not just a transition from people reading our product on a computer screen from reading it on a piece of paper, but a fundamental change in the relationship and the empowerment of our audience. In other words, they didn't need us as a gatekeeper anymore. And so that is why we started pursuing open journalism, as you might call it. And it started with some very fundamental basic things before we ever looked at a newsroom cafe or anything like that. One of them was to have a good corrections policy, for example, because if you want a relationship, if it's about relationships, you need to be have a relationship, you need to have trust and you need to have transparency.
At one of the Connecticut titles, the Register Citizen, 2010 saw it move out of its old building and into a new space, which included a cafe within the office and no separation between the public and journalists. As well as the ability for people to come and speak to the journalists or sit in on editorial meetings, Matt explains more about how the space was used to bring the community closer to the newsroom.
So we opened 134 years of microfilm archives to the public for free, cleaned them up, bought new microfilm machines, put in public access computers. So you could come in and study or work on a work project or meet with friends. We even had people have used our coffee shop for book clubs and knitting circles. So you can come in and engage with us very passively by just using our space, getting to know us kind of on a social basis. And then you can venture over where the cafe and the newsroom kind of meet, no wall in between. And there's a conference table there where we hold our story meetings now in the public. And you can pull up a chair and you can listen in our story planning meetings that used to be held kind of in secret. They're also live streamed on the web, and we have a live chat that goes on so people can participate. You can go further than that. And, you know, a couple feet away from that is a built-in classroom in our newsroom where we have offer free community workshops on things like the Freedom of Information Law, technology topics or storytelling or writing or journalism topics. We have a genealogy class that's really popular. Or if your organization needs a space to meet, you can use that for free. So on any given day, there might be a Little League Board of Directors meeting there, or Young Republicans. And then you could take it even a step further and say you have an interest in women's field hockey, and you have an obsession about it, and you want to write a blog that is the world's biggest authority on women's field hockey in Northwest Connecticut. You can use our equipment. We'll help you edit a video that you take, and we will link to your work. We don't need to own it. We don't need to control it, but we'll help enable you tell those stories. And in the process, we will open our readers to a new source of information. So in addition to our original reporting, we want to encourage, support, aggregate, and curate the work that our citizens can do themselves.
This helps the news outlet gain sources and external information to point to online. But there's a wider impact also, he adds.
This kind of openness has it has widened our sources and brought us new story ideas because people feel comfortable coming in. But most of all, It has helped us with credibility and accuracy and trust between us and our readers. People feel comfortable now literally walking in the door and going up to a reporter and say, hey, you got that wrong. You're so off base here. Or you're missing. And, you know, the biggest mistake that we make as journalists is all the time is lacking context, because you can always have more context in a story. And so we have this open door where people feel comfortable coming in and saying, hey, you missed the boat on this particular story, or there's this other side to it. And so that has really improve what we do. And, you know, we're digital first, so we practice the story as a process, as opposed to a finished product that happens once a day on a piece of paper that's done in secret. So when we're writing that story as a process, starting with actually publishing a list of the stories that we're working on in advance, so the public knows what we're doing before we even kind of start on it, they can be involved at every step in the process.
He said the key to success in this form of audience engagement is to make sure the interactivity is focused on the community's agenda, their interests, and what they are passionate about, and not to try and get the audience to take part in something on your terms only as a news outlet. Returning to the UK now, and at The Guardian, there's been a particular focus on open journalism recently and the importance of the two-way conversation between the news outlet and its audience. National editor Dan Roberts first of all explains what is meant by open journalism.
Well, it's quite a broad term, as you can imagine, and encompasses really everything from a general philosophy that we think readers increasingly want to get involved with news in a much more open and transparent way, through to quite specific requests for help with stories where we think either the experts out there among our readers can bring specialist knowledge to things that we're working on, or else just in terms of their time and their energies, they can help us bring more power to investigations than we could do just with our in-house people alone. So it can encompass a huge range of things, but the philosophy is that we think that journalism is not just for journalists.
There have been a number of projects and experiments launched at The Guardian with this ethos in mind, including the publishing of its news lists on a daily basis to try and gain feedback on the day's agenda, and an open weekend which invited the audience into the title's offices. He updates us on the open news list experiment and what lessons have been learnt so far.
We went through a particularly sort of intense phase for a couple of months where we were encouraging people on to get in touch through Twitter. I have to say, although the news list is still live, we've parked it for the moment because it's not generating vast quantities of tip-offs and feedback. And it's one of the reasons we're sort of experimenting with more focused requests. So when we ask people to kind of just suggest a news story, it's such a huge subject, people don't really know where to start or what we might mean. But when we say we're writing about the NHS reforms tomorrow and we're looking for kind of people who've experienced of it firsthand because they work in a hospital, for example, we get much more practical responses. So we're constantly trying to tweak the different ways we communicate with readers to make these things work. And it has to be said that the ones that work best are the focused ones, and the ones that are sort of, if we're still not really there yet, are these kind of big, broad call-outs like publishing the news list.
But there is still a demand for this kind of engagement, particularly when focused around certain interests or passions, he explained, using the example of the Reality Check blog, where this interaction with the audience has worked well.
Another project, an open project we've been doing in recent months that's worked very well, is a blog called Reality Check, which a colleague of mine, Polly Curtis, was in charge of for a while. It was basically taking a big contentious issue in the news each day and asking readers to help us fact check it and help us kind of go through all the published literature and look at the data behind claims that politicians and other people were making. And readers loved it. And some of them were experts in their field. So if we were looking at crime stats, we'd get sort of, you know, people with PhDs in criminology helping us. But other times, it's just people who were kind of passionate about politics or knew a lot about stats or kind of could find their way around, you know, freedom of information requests, people who had skills that they could help us with. And so we built a community around there that wasn't necessarily one subject area, but it was just all sorts of people who cared about, you know, truth in politics. And so we think that there is a role for quite big, broad projects like that, but you just need to find and tap into the right community.
I asked whether The Guardian was considering holding open editorial meetings.
In terms of our morning editorial conference, we already have a lot of external guests come to it. We have a sort of it's open to the sense that anybody in the building can come along. But we also try and invite people from outside the building, and it's also filmed already at the moment because people in different offices at The Guardian who can't make it along can watch it on the internal monitors. Now, I think it would be a short step to making that external. Something we'd certainly consider. There are pros and cons to it. I wouldn't want to say that it's something we've decided to do, but it's certainly in the realm of the possible.
Dan added that he was unsure whether or not holding open editorial meetings would prove to be useful externally. I also spoke about the topic of open journalism with Roz Atkins, who's presenter of World Have Your Say on the BBC World Service, and which interestingly started holding open editorial meetings with its audience when it launched in 2006. He shares his experience of this.
Because we used to have open editorial meetings every single day, so we would post our phone number online and we'd say we're doing this now, and people would just phone up. And we don't post the phone number online anymore, but we found that the effort was a lot to make the kind of technology work and the setup work so they could have a decent role to play. And actually the number of people who wanted to do it was quite limited, and often, to put it bluntly, they would suggest things which are perfectly valid things to be interested in, but were quite unlikely to make an item on World Have Your Say. And so we've played around with a few different things. I don't think we've really cracked it.
But he added there are elements of this approach which could work, such as other interviewees indicated, when focused on specific areas of interest.
I'm more convinced by the idea of actually setting up a meeting a bit like you set up a programme. So you say, well, today we'll approach five people who are regular contributors to World Have Your Say, and we will make a date with them and set up a Google Plus Hangout or whichever we want to do, and we'll have a discussion with them. And that's the most successful format I've found, in that when we go on the road, we quite regularly invite members of the audience, like 10, to meet us 6 hours before the show, and we'll have a whole editorial meeting with them. And that works a lot better than, in our experience, than just kind of opening the door online and seeing who turns up.
He added that in terms of assessing what the audience is interested in and feeding into editorial output, a key skill is hunting out the clues, as he called them, in the community's conversations.
One of the most successful things we do, and we still do this, is we will sift through an enormous amount of comment that's come in and look for things that are maybe giving us clues to opinions that may well be widely held but don't make their way into the mainstream media because they're not seen as being palatable or interesting or what have you. We did a programme about Asian on black racism. We did a programme about Africans who are missing what colonial rule brought to their country. I can give you quite a few. And all of these debates or discussions came out of us spotting that actually there's quite a few people saying things here, and that doesn't add up with what people are normally, you know, like it kind of offering us clues and getting skilled at spotting the clues and then going back to and saying, hold on, we've seen this. Is this actually a bigger deal than we realised?
We'll be discussing how to produce editorial which reflects both the news agenda and what audiences are interested in at our digital journalism conference, News Rewired Full Stream Ahead, which takes place on Friday the 13th of July. See the agenda and buy the last of the remaining tickets at www.newsrewired.com. You've been listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast.